Well, the stock market seems to be recovering much more quickly than the economy, and we'll talk with our next guest about why that might be the case. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Frank Armstrong back. He's a certified financial planner, the founder and president of Investor Solutions. He's also the author of The Informed Investor and co-author of Save Your Retirement. He has more than 47 years of experience in the securities and financial services industry. So we'll get his perspective on what's happening and answer your questions as well. So are you feeling nervous about your retirement account? What questions do you have about the stock market? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to talk at WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And great to have him with us today. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
Well, the stock market seems to be recovering. I think it was up again today, and certainly since the last you were with us a couple of months ago. But the economy certainly doesn't seem to be. Why the disconnect there?
Well, we're seeing a deliberate effort by all the global governments to have shut down huge portions of their economy. So you've got here the depression level, unemployment, lots of you've got social strife going on, as everybody is aware, and so that's the bad news in the real economy. The good news for stock investors is that this crisis has a definite end point in sight. It's not like 2008 when we were all sitting around wondering if the whole financial system was going to crumble and maybe take decades to recover. We know that, or we think we know, that within 2 years we'll have a vaccine, we'll have a treatment regimen in place that works. We'll be able to do testing and follow-up so we can identify people who are sick and or likely to spread the disease, isolate them for a while, treat them, and get them back to work. So there's a definite endpoint that everybody's looking towards, and it might slip a few months here or there, but it's going to be over. And investors are looking forward to that point and saying, gee, I'd like to be invested when that happens, because prices are pretty depressed now compared to what they were. And it would sure be good to see that increase in prices when the economy starts hitting full tilt boogie again. So the stock market's always called a leading indicator. And in this case, it seems to believe that these problems are going to be solved and put behind us, and that the basic underlying economy is being sustained by massive, absolutely massive amounts, unimaginable amounts of cash and liquidity being pumped in by the Congress on one side and the Federal Reserve on the other.
Yeah. Is that a good thing in your mind?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a Keynesian enough to know that when the economy is poor, balancing the budget shouldn't be your very top concern. When the economy is good, you can start to rebalance it. And, you know, we can certainly afford to balance the budget, or at least prevent it from getting any worse. We have one of the lowest total tax rates in the world. If you take your state, local, federal income tax, and all that other stuff, our rates are dramatically lower than almost any other country around. So we can afford another couple percent, if that's what it takes, in taxes to prevent the budget from becoming unmanageable.
Frank Armstrong, our guest, founder and principal of Investor Solutions, Inc. It's great to have him with us. Join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Do you think there is going to be more stimulus money going out, as long as we're talking about money?
Yeah, almost invariably. I think it's only a matter of how much and how quickly, but I think everybody's committed to to so-called keep the patient alive so that when he recovers, you know, so when the situation is better, he can recover and bounce back. And the consumer is the key to the U.S. economy. It's about 70% of it or so. If you don't keep the consumer healthy and happy and able to spend, then Katie bar the doors. And everybody seems to be aware of that. You know, there's some small partisan bickering going on, but in the end, they get together and spend the money they need to keep this thing going.
We have some callers. Steve in Wausau, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Just a question is, what do I do? They're giving us a year off on this minimum required distribution, and are they going to be asking for, is that going to just go on our account, our retirement's account, and then next year they'll say, well, now here's your minimum required distribution? And the question would be, should I take it this year and use it to pay down debt?
If you take it, it's going to be taxable. If you're in a very, very low tax bracket, then it shouldn't matter. And if your income is off because you're not employed, this might be an optimum time to take it, and it'll reduce your total tax debt over the rest of your life. On the other hand, if you don't need the money just don't take it, and next year on 12/31, they'll add up the value of your accounts, apply the appropriate formula to that, and tell you what you got to pay next year.
All right.
Is that responsive to your question?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Well, you mentioned cash flow. What advice do you have for people who have a cash flow problem? Does it make sense to take cash out of their investments?
Well, obviously, we all want to preserve our capital if we can, but, you know, if it's a matter of having your firstborn starve, you take the money and you do what you need to. But the Congress, in their infinite wisdom, and the IRS have loosened up requirements to draw money out of the various pension accounts, and that should be an assistance to some people. But remember, when you take that money out, it's either got to be repaid or it's going to become taxable income to you, and you're cannibalizing your future retirement benefits. So it's something you need to give a good deal of thought to, but they did provide you with an emergency bailout provision if you need it. But of course, you know, do everything you can to conserve cash and keep your savings intact, but in the real world, that's not possible for everybody, and we understand that.
Yeah, for sure. For those who have some cash, is it a good time to get into the market, or is it kind of too late?
I don't think it's too late. You know, we've seen an incredible recovery. 60 days ago or so, if you'd asked me, you know, are we going to see 40% upside on the S&P in the next 2 months? I don't think I would have said with a great deal of conviction that this is going to happen. But I think most people think stocks are fairly priced now based on the impact on earnings of the various companies that make up the various indexes. But I do expect that if you were to invest now, perhaps next year you'd want to put an axe through my head for suggesting this, but 5 years from now you'd look back and say, gee, that was pretty smart. Those are pretty good prices, and I'm glad I did that.
What about the person who's in a sort of the short run thing? I have, well, even personally, I have a daughter who's going to be going on to college, and I had investments in a 529 account that took a big hit. I haven't looked at them recently. But the short term is a problematic for some people who, you know, are either maybe they're going to be retiring soon, or they're in a situation like I am with a daughter who's on her way to college in a year.
There are various ways you can get that money in the short term for some people.
second mortgage on your house at very favorable rates, other ways to raise the funds. But, you know, ideally, when you do your financial planning, you'll have enough of very safe assets tucked away to meet your short-term needs so that, you know, when the stock market goes down, you're not faced with liquidating your account when prices are way down. But, you know, that's all history now, you know, water under the dam. We are where we are, and there are other ways somehow, sometimes, to get those funds. And those are all worth exploring. But I guess if, in the short term, taking out a second mortgage or increasing your mortgage, the rates have never been this low in my lifetime. I don't expect to see them this low ever again. I'm old enough to remember when people gave each other high fives if they got a mortgage rate at 14%.
Oh, man. And what is it now?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a way to get liquidity if you've got that asset to borrow against. And for everybody's got an individually different situation, but everybody has opportunities that may not fit the next guy. So it's a matter of looking at your whole situation with the financial planner and seeing what the best way forward is.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today, he is founder and principal of Investor Solutions. He's going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. So you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Back with Frank right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at your investments on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Frank Armstrong back with us, certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions. He has more than 47 years of experience in the securities and financial services industry. So what investment questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Reggie in Oshkosh has a question for you, Frank. So let's go there. Hi, Reggie.
Hey, Reggie.
Hey there, guys. So my question is, I'm in a land contract with an option to buy early. And I wanted to know, I have a 401k with a good company match. I didn't get hit too hard by the whole COVID recession thing. And would it be a bad idea to take the hardship withdrawal from that to use as a down payment now and get the good home rate? And what would be the consequences of that? And I can take my answer off the air.
Yeah, I don't think you qualify for the hardship withdrawal unless you can claim that you've been impacted by COVID, which would mean that you or one of your family members was impacted or some other impact. You can't just willy-nilly take it out, unfortunately. If you do take it out, you're still going to get taxed on it. So that reduces the amount of net proceeds or increases the amount that you got to take out of your 401k. So it's something you need to look at pretty carefully. From a number of different aspects, maybe you should take a look at what your other sources might be to finance this transaction if you're determined to go forward with it, maybe get some help looking at what opportunity sets you have in front of you.
Yeah, thanks, Reggie. Appreciate it. Dan in Franksville, your turn now. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just want to play devil's advocate a teeny bit. I'm worried that with all this quantitative easing all these years and stuff, I mean, the economy is like half good. What was it, somewhere around 2013 or 14, they said they're going to resume interest rates. Well, they did it. The stock market basically crashed when they just tried to go up, and then they went back down to basically 1 or 0%, and that was during supposedly a good economy. So they pumped all this money in. I don't know who's going to pay it. the banks are all leveraged like 20 to 1. All the big banks around the world, Lloyd's, the European Central Bank, Bank of all of them are. I don't know how all this money is going to get paid back. So you look at the debt of this country, then you look at the banks are basically insolvent, and all this money is going to companies that probably should have failed and banks that should have failed. So I'm worried we have a system like the old Soviet Union. And remember what happened to the old Soviet Union, where the Politburo decides what price discovery is going to be and all this other stuff. Instead of the Federal Reserve propping up the stock market, it'd be like at zero right now if they weren't pumping all this cash into it. I don't know where the cash is. Who's going to pay it back?
Well, Dan, thank you for calling.
That's a lot to consider. First of all, I guess one of the big concerns when you start pumping tons of money into the economy is inflation. But that's been absent. The Federal Reserve, even when the times were good, couldn't get the inflation rate up to what their target was, which is somewhere between 2% and 3%. It just wouldn't happen. Second, we do have plenty of capacity to pay back federal debt for sure, or state debt by just increasing taxes. And taxes are not a huge burden on the American people compared to other economies around the world. I believe that the banks are pretty well capitalized compared to where they were, for instance, back in 2008. And their big problem is that they can't make money borrowing from the Federal Reserve and putting it out for loans. So the loan demand is very, very small right now. Compared to the capital that they have available or could have available if they cared to. On balance, I think they've got to spend the money to keep the economy going and that we can pay it back later. And it may be more difficult for some sectors than others, but on balance, I think it's the only wise thing to do. But, you know, other people will have different opinions, and there are deficit hawks who are perennially grinding that axe, and they're always going to have their say. And in fact, we don't want to go hog wild, but we got to keep this economy going, or it's going to be ugly.
Right, Dan. Thanks again, Dale in Hayward. It's your turn. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Hey, I have a question. My wife and I are, for the next 5 years, are living off income from the sale of a business. So we know what we need to live on. But I guess my question is, at that time, you know, we're going to have to start using Social Security and our, you know, our investments. What is a reasonable percentage that we can take out of our nest egg, if you will, on an annual basis and sustain us for the next 25 years after that or whatever? We'll both be 67, 68 at that age when we're going to need to tap into that. And I've heard everything from 3% to 5%. Is there kind of a number you can throw out?
Well, you know, if you did a Google search, you'd find thousands of papers written on sustainable withdrawal rates, and they all have one set of assumptions or another. But, you know, as a rule of thumb, I think 4% has stood the test of time pretty well in a diversified portfolio that's not subject to too much risk. But again, my crystal ball is always pretty cloudy. Maybe I could turn it in for a better one, but 4% has been a time-tested rule of thumb that works pretty well. You could write a paper tomorrow saying 2% was the only thing that could be sustainable, or you could justify 7% using some other set of criteria, and we'll all meet 100 years from now and have a beer and see who was right.
There you go. Appreciate that call, Dale, very much. You know, I was on your website again today, just checking it out this morning a little bit. And, there, you know, in Dale's situation, he was asking for information that you have a lot of information on your website. What is it? InvestorSolution.com,
right.
.com. Talk about that.
Well, we got, you know, I've got the first book I ever wrote, I wrote for the Internet, on the Internet. It's called Investment Strategies for the 21st Century. And actually, most of that has held up, stood the test of time very, very well. And it's free. It's free to download. And there's probably 1,000 other articles there that you can search through to find various items in financial planning or investment theory or retirement planning or whatever, whatever you happen to be interested in. And I'm happy to get the word out there. I think Americans really are shortchanged on their financial education. You can be a brain surgeon without ever having taken a course to show you how to balance your checkbook. And you know, it's unfortunate because it has costs when people make really poor financial decisions. And so I've put that out there to help people make better financial decisions and understand a little better how the system works.
Judy in Fitchburg wonders, what are you advising your clients who want to invest in a clean energy future, wind power, solar, electric vehicles, hydropower, etc.? How can the average investor get their mutual fund managers to offer funds that are completely free of fossil fuels?
Well, there's an you know, if you'd asked me this 5 or 10 years ago, I'd have said it's not possible. But there's so many new products out there that are reasonable and screened for various social criteria that you know are well diversified. They run from zero carbon. We're never going to have anything that has a bit of carbon in it to a more sustainable, balanced approach that says we're going to reduce the carbon footprint of the portfolio by 95%, but that there are some good actors who accidentally put out a little bit of energy. And many of these are what we call index funds that just buy the whole economy and then screen out what they consider to be the bad actors. But everybody's got a little bit different definition of who those bad actors might be and who we want to screen out. And there's the where you need to do the research to find a fund that meets your needs. But I think you can do it economically and effectively without compromising in any meaningful way the investment returns. Although obviously, if for instance you have no energy in your portfolio and energy has a great year, then you'll have a little bit different return than the market as a whole. But the converse could also happen. So I think there's plenty of product out there. It's not a matter of changing in existing funds to be more sensitive to that issue. It's a matter of searching out funds that are designed specifically for people with your objectives. Mm.
Chuck in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. The question I'm wondering is, what would be the advantage or disadvantage of taking your traditional Roth IRA or your traditional IRAs and rolling them into a Roth and paying your taxes? And I, in regard to, like, I'm retired and 70 years old. Are there some advantages of doing that and paying taxes now, and then later on when I die, then there are no more taxes to it for the children?
Well, the so-called stretch IRA provisions have gone away. Now they would have 10 years to take the money out tax-free in a Roth. But the big advantage would be if you had a particularly low year for income and taxation, taking the money out and investing it in a Roth might lower your tax burden and increase your net rate of return for the rest of your life. But the big advantage for Roths for people who have large estates is that they can prepay the income tax for their children, and if they care to do that, that's a good thing. I'm a big advocate of the Roth because you don't have to deal with RMDs ever, which is a good thing, and it can be a multi-purpose savings tool for you that would, for people who are accumulating money, it could pay for college education and other things, because you can always take out what you've contributed tax-free. But again, you got to look at your individual situation and look at the pros and cons and what the tax implications would be to you and future generations.
You know, talking about RMD, and what does that stand for, by the way?
Minimum required distribution.
Yeah,
required minimum distribution.
There we go.
And it's basically they take your account balance every December 31st and multiply it by a percentage based on your age and the age of your dependents. And it tells you what your RMD for the following year must be. And, of course, that percentage goes up every year as you get older. The idea is they don't want to forever give up the taxation of that account.
Tom, and talking about that, Tom wondered, he had heard that the RMD would not be required for 2020. This was in legislation passed by Congress because of COVID, and wonders if that is really correct. And I believe it.
It absolutely is correct. And no RMDs for 2020. And if you took some out after, I think, January 31st, you can put it back in without penalty. And otherwise, you can talk to your accountant and see how that might shake out. But if you haven't taken it out and you don't want to, don't.
Dave emailed us what you think about preferred stock funds. Also, what sectors of the economy do you recommend and what should we avoid for new investments?
Preferred stock funds are kind of a hybrid. They're almost stocks, but there's a little bit of an income like bond. And typically, they don't have as high a total return as stocks. And typically, they have somewhat lower volatility. But we don't single out preferred stocks as an investment vehicle. And it's hard to know from day to day what segments of the economy will be great tomorrow. I mean, nobody would have imagined on January 1st this year that Zoom and all was going to be such a big hit, or that airlines were going to be shut down. And so, trying to play those has been a loser's game because it introduces extra risk into your portfolio when you compare that with just simply buying the whole economy and letting the market sort it out. I'm a big passive investor advocate. That's all we do, is we buy the whole segment of the economy that we're interested in. Having said that, over long periods of time, the so-called value stocks, which is a really nice term for cheap stocks relative to their earnings, and smaller companies and more profitable companies tend to have total returns that are higher over the long periods of time. But they come and go. They're very fashionable. They come in and out of fashion, I should say. And so in one period of time, the S&P 500 is the world's greatest thing. But I can show you a 10-year period of time where you would have lost 10%. By owning the S&P while a balanced portfolio doubled. And nobody knew that. The problem is it's easy to pick out those times looking backwards, but you don't know it going forward.
Yeah, yeah. John in Dubuque, Iowa, let's go to you. Hi, John.
So I had a quick question. I just graduated college, and I'm in a lot of student debt. And I graduated, I'm going to be a teacher. I want to teach high school social studies, so I'm not going to be making too much money. And I was just wondering how or what are some of the best strategies to go into investing as well as trying to balance paying off, my student debt within the next 10 years.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for being a teacher. It's the most important part of our of our civilization, and I truly mean that. And obviously, teachers don't get rich, but they don't get nearly the level of respect that they deserve. Having said that, you know, a good way to go about that is to just fund your IRA every year, and you can put $6,500 away or so per year, I believe now, and tax defer it for retirement. You could do a Roth, and the Roth would, if you did a Roth IRA, you could use it to fund your house purchase 20 years from now, or put your child through college by withdrawing your contributions and leaving the rest to compound tax-free forever. I think that's probably the most potent investment strategy available to the vast majority of people. And just make sure you control your costs and you widely diversify, and you don't play with it too much so that you do market timing and stuff. Just put it in a widely diversified portfolio and let it sit there.
Yeah, and then but you have to balance that against paying off the student debt.
Yeah, well, but on the investment side, the IRAs are probably the way to go, and paying off the student debt is obviously, the student debt is going to be eating into your cash flow for a long period of time, and balancing the two. But you know, if you thought about what the cost of student debt was compared to what you'd make in the market for the rest of your life, that might help you to balance some of that out. Probably your debt payments are somewhat less than you would make long term, very long term in the market. I'm a big believer in reducing debt to the extent possible, but it's a balancing act. And I don't know what your family situation is, your housing situation, anything else. So it's hard to give you specific advice on a generalized question, but you know, good luck to you. Thanks for choosing that profession, and do make an effort to pay off both your student debt and do some saving if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, John, for calling. Appreciate it. In our last minute, final advice, Frank, for our listeners?
Well, I think the rebound for the last 60 days has shown the benefit of not panicking during market fluctuations. If you're into stocks, you should understand that the markets are going to fluctuate and that you won't be able to predict it in advance. And that keeping a cool head and maintaining your investment strategy that's designed for you and your particular needs is invariably the best thing to do. And it's painful at times, but it has the distinct advantage of always having worked before.
Frank, on that note, thanks so much for being with us. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I hope so, too. It's always a pleasure.
Frank Armstrong, take a look at his website. It's investorsolutions.com. Lots of really good information there. He's a founder of Investor Solutions, as a matter of fact. Always fun to have him with us, and we'll have him back and talk with him again. Friday on Garden Talk, we'll be getting the kids interested in gardening as we talk with Mark Dwyer. How do you get your kids going on gardening? Well, Mark's got some suggestions for that. That's at 11 tomorrow. Or tune in 6 o'clock Saturday mornings right here on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.